Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yuralee Wickham Ashby. And today I have in the studio with me Sharon Trotman, a beautiful young lady who has a wealth of knowledge and experiences that we will talk about a bit today. Welcome to the program, Sharon.
Good morning. Thanks, Yuralee.
Sharon,
thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Tell us a little about yourself. You know, you have multiple sclerosis, but that doesn't define you. So let us hear who the real Sharon Trotman is.
Multiple sclerosis is just one part of my life. I have divided my life into two parts, which was before multiple sclerosis and after multiple sclerosis. And before multiple sclerosis, I was the usual active individual. Spent a lot of my time trying to help as many people as I could. It was interesting that when I acquired my disability, I had spent 4 years in Canada, and that was my first exposure to accommodations for people with disabilities. Because in Canada, in Toronto at the time, I'm talking about between 1990 and 1994, it wasn't an issue. All accommodations were made for people with disabilities. And I followed the trend because that is what you were expected to do. So you were expected not to park in disabled spaces. You were expected not to stand in their spaces on the bus. You were expected not to use their washrooms. And all of those things I went along with. And when I came home, I kind of brought that back home with me. And it used to annoy me when people would do things like that, although I myself didn't have a disability. And I used to be annoyed when people would do things like park in spaces for persons with disability, use facilities meant for persons with disabilities. And then when I acquired my disability, I saw it from the other side as well. So a lot of things that were there for persons like myself were generally sometimes not available to us, because able-bodied people wanted to utilize those facilities. So that was one of my major issues. I would always speak out strongly about it. Things like parking, bathroom facilities. And I had this fight even in my workplace where I was working at the time. I had this fight, and it came to a point where they had to put a lock on the door, and the only person who could get in there was the person with the key. And that person was me. And I felt sort of sad that we had to resort to that, and that people could not respect the space for what it is.
Right. And I think you're correct, Sharon, that people generally do not respect the rights of persons with disabilities, the right to have this specific bathroom to accommodate my type of disability, or the parking space, again, to accommodate my being able to access the supermarket or the pharmacy or the school, wherever it is. And I believe this is where we need to continuously educate persons about respecting the rights of a fellow human being, especially the beings with disabilities.
Yes. And one of the things I always used to tell people, even at my old workplace, I would say, but you know, you want to use my washroom, but do you want everything else that comes with that? I don't think you want everything else that comes with that. So be happy that you can actually use the regular washroom, because if I could get in the regular washroom, I would be extremely happy, because it would mean I wouldn't need my chair. It would mean I can walk on my own and I can go about my business as I used to in my old life. Mm-hmm. So I used to put it from that perspective. I'm saying, believe me, you don't want to sit in this wheelchair. So why should you want to benefit from any facilities that are available for me?
Okay, so Sharon, tell us in terms of your work, what type of work you would have done in the past?
Okay, my training was in tourism. So I worked at the Ministry of Tourism for 10 years. And one of the interesting things was I acquired my disability while I was working at the ministry. So all the people who worked with me at the ministry would have known both sides of me, the active person and then the person who was wheelchair dependent. And what I found interesting, and I noted this to somebody one day, that the people who worked with me before didn't really know how to deal with my disability. Because here it is, I have a disability, but my mind is still sharp. I'm still the same person. I can still articulate. I can still argue a point. I can still put things over. And I went through a period where my work was being given to other individuals. And at one point, I had to look at one of my superiors and I said to her, you know, my body is in the wheelchair, not my brain. I was so frustrated to see all my projects being handed off to other officers. And I'm sitting in the ministry. And when they did that, of course, then there's nothing for me to do. So then what's next for me? So I started to push back. I started to push back. And I don't know who heard, but then things sort of evened out, where I was once again given the usual responsibilities I had, which I was capable of doing. It was just that I couldn't physically run around. And on occasion, I would need somebody to act as my legs, but that wasn't too often.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we see so many examples of persons with disabilities in the workforce. And I know of a young man in Trinidad who was a police officer mm-hmm. with sight, became blind, and still retained his post as a police officer. Obviously, his duties change. So he's doing more administrative type of work, but he has been able to retrain, retool, and fit right in, continuing smartly. So we have examples of people with disabilities, whether they acquired or have congenital disabilities, being able to be accommodated within the workforce. And it just takes a lot of talking and exploring solutions.
But you know, Yudeli, it wasn't all bad. One thing I can say is that because of my disability, I started having weakness in my hands. And at one point, I couldn't type. So what they did was they invested in software so that mm-hmm. I could dictate. So that software would allow me to send emails, write documents. I could still produce all the things that I would need to produce. It's just that I would have that additional help. And that worked well for me. So when I left the ministry, I also took that with me to the BTPA.
Okay.
And I was able to utilize that software, which made it a lot easier for me. The only drawback was when you had meetings, I on occasion would ask for permission to record meetings so that I could then go back and make my notes. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't make notes in meetings anymore because right. I just couldn't keep up, you know?
Yes.
And I had to depend on my memory to recall a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. Well, the focus really is about accommodations, providing reasonable accommodations, whether it is in the work setting or the educational setting, wherever. It's really about providing the necessary accommodations so that individuals with disabilities can continue to do the necessary tasks and actions that they need to do in order to
yes.
achieve their goals, whether it's health, education, employment, whatever it is, it's really about accommodations. That's where the focus yes. needs to be.
It is. But you know, Yudeli, I am so tired. I've been around for a little bit, not as long as you, obviously, but I am so tired of people paying lip service. People paying lip service. I was in the workforce. And unfortunately, I had to withdraw. But I'm thinking that there are people at university with disabilities who are going to be coming out with degrees, who are going to be looking for employment. What accommodations are going to be made for them? Are people still going to continue to pay lip service while people have degrees that they've earned and they're unable to put what they've learned into practice, how does that benefit Barbados as a whole? And that has always been my issue. We're paying lip service to these issues. We're saying, yes, you know, everybody's talking about all persons with disabilities are going to be included. You're forming commissions, you're doing these different things. And still, at the end of the day, able-bodied people are making decisions for persons with disabilities, and the persons with disabilities are not being consulted.
Well, the other point to that, Sharon, is that we have an aging population. Again, naturally, as you age, some persons acquire disabilities. Mm-hmm. We also have a population that is riddled with non-communicable diseases. Again, leading to the development of several types of disabilities. How do we accommodate them in the work setting? That is a major point for national discussion. How do we accommodate individuals with cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure, and other conditions that require medical attention, that require, you know, taking short breaks at work, and some other accommodations? We need to be very thorough about it, as well as very committed to providing the type of accommodations that are needed so that workers can feel not only comfortable in the workspace, but have that leverage to be more productive.
I agree.
So, Sharon, tell us about some of the other things you have been involved in.
Well, I have been, for the most part, doing, you know, one-off projects here and there. Just trying to keep the brain active, being involved in other activities. And, you know, with COVID, a lot of the shutdowns. And to be honest with you, with my illness, I have been limiting my exposure outside of my home. I've been very, very draconian about it. I actually only leave home when I have a doctor's appointment. I am very particular about who visits. I prefer to speak to people over the phone. And people say that you're antisocial. And don't get me wrong, I'm fully vaccinated and boosted, but I don't know what the interaction will be with my particular disability, given the nature of MS. So I always err on the side of caution. And I know some people think that I'm being extremely cautious, but it's better to be safe than sorry.
Right. In terms of your family support, let's explore that, because all the research points to persons feeling satisfied and contented and being able to achieve with high levels of family support, family involvement. What has that been like for you?
That has been good for me. My core team is my parents, my mom and my dad. So they're my core team, and they're the ones who would take on my day-to-day care. I have a cousin who lives next door to me. If I at any time need anything, I can always call her and she would come and she would assist me wherever she can and however she could. I have a neighbor who's also very present, and if I needed something, I could call him as well. So I do have a team of people. I have my physio and my occupational therapist that visit me once a week, every week, unless there are holidays and so on that would interrupt. And they do interrupt sometimes, but I generally see them once per week, both of them. So that core group around me is interesting, very good support. It keeps me sharp and allows me to do the things that I want to do. On the other hand, we have also entertained the idea of having someone come in. And this was before COVID. we had entertained the idea of having someone come in to assist my parents with my physical care in terms of my baths and so on. And when COVID hit, it was like, gee, we can't get anybody now. And we're still struggling with that, getting that assistance, because the reality is my parents are getting older.
Right.
So at some point, I will have to get somebody to come in to assist with my care.
And this is one of the areas that I believe we need to pay greater attention to as a society. How do we provide accommodations? How do we provide a meaningful service for individuals with disabilities whose parents or caregivers may be unable to provide that practical support?
Mm-hmm.
As well as those individuals who may not be in a financial position to pay for such a service. It is a needed service in Barbados.
It is. And one of the things that I am recognizing now, because I came out medically unfit, so I am currently on a disability pension from NIS, and my pension is not what my salary was. So my buying power has shrunk. So when I start to consider all these things, I mean, even basic things like transportation. Transportation is very expensive, you know? Transportation is extremely expensive. And I used to be able to travel in a car. I now can't do that. So I have to use specialty transportation, which is not cheap. And I'm wondering how a lot of people are managing, because it has to be a struggle. Because why should you be put in the position where you have to decide whether you're going to pay for transportation, or you're going to buy food, or you're going to pay electricity? I don't think people need to be put in that situation. And I know a lot of people are struggling.
So being very mindful of this, Sharon, what would you propose could be done?
I've thought about it, and I'm still trying to come up with an answer or something that is workable, because I don't want to go to the old fallback of government. We are the government, not the 30 people sitting in the House of Assembly. Each and every one of us who has a right to vote, a privilege to vote, we are the government. So I don't want it to be a situation where we say, oh, okay, well, what can government do to help? I think this is a situation of what can we bring to the table, even if we need to get support, some support from government or from central government, but it needs to be a conversation, as you said before. And it's not something that's going to be solved overnight, but it needs to be a conversation with everybody at the table. Every person represented, the disabled community being represented at the table, to discuss how we can meet this challenge and how we can come up with solutions. Because, you know, I always used to hear my great grandmother say, you know, two heads are better than one. So imagine what would happen if many heads got together at the table to come up with solutions. And I'm certain there are people out there who have ideas that we can put on the table and discuss.
I quite agree. Now, Sharon, as we enter into June, until November, it's classified as the hurricane season. What type of plans do you and your family have to mitigate against any of the calamities that could befall this country?
Okay. One of the things that we have focused on is making the house as hurricane ready as possible. Because I went to a meeting many years ago with one of the DEOs, and he said, you know, it is better for you to shore up your house than to come to a hurricane shelter. He said a hurricane shelter is not a nice experience. He said, and for people like you with disabilities, it would not be a nice experience at all. He said conditions are rough because we do not have purpose-built hurricane shelters. We are using schools, and a lot of them do not have the necessary facilities. So not every school has showers, and not every school has facilities for persons with disabilities, persons in wheelchairs, persons who are blind, persons who are hearing impaired. We don't have shelters with a lot of those facilities.
Okay. So you're making your home hurricane ready. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like for your home?
For my home? Well, one of the other things we were discussing was getting the shutters for the windows.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing that we were talking about, because, you know, with flying objects and breaking glass and so on, and you don't want wind coming in. So that's right. One other thing that we've been discussing. But we've taken all the necessary precautions with the straps on the roofs. We try to make sure that we have on hand the necessary supplies, you know, the usual batteries, the usual flashlights and so on. And I try to ensure that we have at least one radio that we can use with batteries.
Right.
So we can get information. Because times like this, information is very important. So those are the things that we do on a regular basis. And we go through and we try to make sure that our supplies are current.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have expired stuff. So sometimes they will require that you use stuff.
Right.
So it doesn't expire, and then you can replace it with new stuff.
Okay, Sharon, we've explored quite a lot today. We looked at the whole hurricane preparedness, at least some parts of it. What are your thoughts, though, in relation to persons with disabilities and the level of advocacy, the level of service for this population?
One of my challenges is I find whenever I go anywhere with my mom to do business, people always address my mom. And she's always directing them back to me. They overlook us. It is almost like we're invisible. And I think employers need to spend some time and a little cash training their staff on sensitivity. And there are a number of courses around that are available through the council. And you're working on something with disabilities unit as well, to look at addressing that issue. So that when I go into the bank with my mom, don't make the assumption it's my mom that's doing business. Ask, how may I help you? And when I respond, speak to me. Don't speak to my mom. Because more often than not, I'm the one doing business. She's just accompanying me. And I know a lot of people are overlooked in that respect. And people tend to talk to you as though you're stupid.
Quite true.
And people need to understand it is insulting. Just because someone has a disability, they may speak different, they may speak slowly, but it does not mean they're stupid. You just have to take the time and give them an opportunity to express themselves. It's a simple thing.
Very well said, Sharon. Very well said. And this is what we are challenging you, the members in our society, to do. Treat persons with disabilities with respect. You address them directly when you are providing a service or want to obtain information. But generally, just speak directly to the individual and ensure that the services you are providing is being able to be accessed by individuals with disabilities.
Like, for instance, the bank machines. I don't know how many bank machines we have here that cater to the sight impaired.
Not many. That is one of the burning issues around accessibility for the blind and visually impaired.
And I can't go into a bank machine and get my chair up to the machine.
Correct. So these are issues that even the banking association can start to address. When we look at the international banks outside of Barbados that have branches in Barbados, they make reasonable accommodations for their customers with disabilities. Yet these banks at the local end do not do it. And we need to challenge them on that.
Oh, correct, because we're customers too.
Mm-hmm.
We are customers too.
We can continue this conversation because it's not very exhaustive.
No, it isn't.
I will have to invite you back again where we can continue to have a real in-depth conversation around disability and some possible solutions, because that's what we are all about, finding solutions.
And I look forward to your call.
It has been a pleasure chatting with you.
Yes, remember, the pleasure is all mine.
Right. Remember, you have been listening to Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby, and my special guest today, Sharon Trotman. You can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or via Starcom at 1-246-430-7300. You can check this and past episodes on the VOB929.com website. And I look forward to seeing you next week. So until then, do love yourself and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Ciao.